I will move the approval of the minutes. Vice Chair Purcell, would you make a motion?
So moved.
Vice Chair Purcell moves the approval of the minutes for March 23rd, 2023. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the approval say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 23rd, 2023 are approved. Members, we have one bill on the agenda today. That is the House Ag Omnibus Bill. Today, we'll do a walkthrough of the bill. We'll hear from testimony. And members, please, if you can keep your questions to be more of an inquiry about the bill and also about the nature of the testimonies, we will have a chance to thoroughly discuss the substance of the bill on Thursday. I know that there are testifiers who have come far away to be here today, and so I want to be respectful of everyone's time and their opportunity to testify before the committee. And with that, I move House File 2278 back for consideration. We have the DE amendment. And the DE amendment, once again, is the omnibus bill. And it will just, I would like to move to put in the shape that I would like. And all those, any discussion to the DE? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes have it, the motion prevails. The DE amendment is adopted. Now it is in the shape that I want. I just wanted to make a couple of remarks before I have nonpartisan staff go through the bill. I want to highlight some of the programs that we know are priorities of the committee. And also for many stakeholders. I'm also a member of the Legacy Committee, and while making this budget, I've looked at funds from other targets, and I've worked to make sure that those funds also meet the priorities and needs of the agriculture community. And those other targets I've looked at are within the Clean Water Funds. We know that the Ag BMP program is a popular program. There's $9.5 million fiscal year 24-25. In the Clean Water Funds for Ag BMP program. That's an increase of about $3 million. There's $6 million in fiscal year 24-25 for Forever Green within the Clean Water Funds, and $3.5 million in fiscal year 24-25 for soil health equipment grants. And those are some of the things that I've looked at while in the process of making this budget. So I just want to put that out there, ensure that there are also other targets that we're looking at while considering the budget for the Ag Committee. And with that, I'll start with Ken Savory, who will walk through the spreadsheet of the DE amendment.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. For the tape, Ken Savory, nonpartisan House Fiscal Staff. You'll have in your packet a spreadsheet with a timestamp of 3/27/23 at 8:39 p.m. That will be the document which we'll be walking through and which is based off the DE amendment. That you'll see several columns across the top of the spreadsheet. I can just walk through and identify each one for the purpose of the walkthrough. Column A lists the program. Columns B and C are the fund, and most commonly we'll be talking about the general fund. Secondly, the type. Most commonly, we'll be talking about a direct appropriation, but there are some statutory appropriations for other funds as well. Column D is the 2022-23 February forecast for the previous budget. Column E and F are the 24-25 base for the budget area and the 26-27 base for the budget areas, so the base and the base tails. Column G is any funding that the governor recommended in FY23. Column H is the governor's recommendations for 24-25. Column I is the difference between the base and the governor's proposal in 24 and 25. Column J is the governor's tails or the governor's 26-27. And K is the difference between the governor and the base tails. Most importantly for today is the DE amendment and the following last columns, which is column P, which is the DE amendment for 24 and 25. The DE makes no changes to FY23. That is why there is no 23 column for the DE amendment. Column Q is the House or the DE amendment minus the base, the difference between. And the DE amendment tails is column R, and the difference column is column S. For the purpose of the walkthrough, I'll be going over the changes within the DE, and they're arranged by division of Department of Agriculture. So we'll start with Protection Services on line 7 and proceed down to the change items on line 36. Excuse me, line 37. The first change is for the meat processing liaison. This was the governor's change in which the DE carries. There's $150,000 per biennium. Line 38 is the food licensing modernization fee dedication. This is the reduction in spending general fund to the division protection services at $3.827 million, one time in 24 and 25, and then the identical amount is repeated in FY 26 and 27. Line 39 is the grain indemnity fund. $5 million, a one-time transfer to the Ag Fund for the purposes of the rider language. This is identical to the governor. Line 40, soil health equipment grants. That is $250,000 per year, so $500,000 for the biennium. This also is repeated in the tails at $500,000. Line 41 is the noxious weed grants. This is identical to the governor at $400,000 per year. Line 42 is the pollinator research account. This is a similar spending item to the governor, but the funding is different. Governor had sustaining funding each year, but this item is $2.5 million one time only in fiscal year 24. Line 43 is a reduction to Forever Green. This is not a reduction to the actual item, but a moving of the item. They're currently in the base. There is $630,000 a year for Forever Green. And this reduction will move it to AGREET, as we'll see in a couple moments. Line 44 is the living cover crop grants at $500,000 each year, but that is one time. Line 45 is money for a report on feral pigs and mink at $65,000 one time in FY 24. Line 46 is the PFAS pesticide registration and oversight appropriation. It is $1,688,000 in FY 24-25, and then $1,124,000 in FY 26-27. The numbers there are data from the fiscal note. Line 47 is a systemic pesticide and treated seed report. That is $100,000. All total for protection services on line 49 is the total change for protection services is $6,716,000 in 24-25. And a reduction of $6,340,000 in FY 26-27. The majority of the reduction coming from dedicating the food licensing modernization fees. Moving on to non-general fund items for protection services. Those start on line 67 and continue on line 68. This is just the federal match for the meat processing liaison at $75,000 per year. Additional spending on line 69 from food licensing modernization out of the Ag Fund. This is identical to the governor's recommendation and it was in the governor's proposal information. Line 70 just shows the Ag Fund now having the ability to spend the $2.5 million that was transferred to the Ag Fund from the general fund for the pollinator research account. Line 71 is the food retail plan review fee modernization at $89,000 per year. This is identical to the governor's proposal. Line 72 shows the additional collection of Ag Fund fees that accompany the Grain Indemnity Fund. This was information from the fiscal note. So that would be $1.5 million a year of spending in FY 25, and then the same amount in FY 26. Line 73 is the fertilizer tonnage fee increase. This is additional spending out of the Ag Fund at $750,000 a year, starting in fiscal 25, and then continuing into the tails at the same amount. Madam Chair, that concludes the protection services and for changes, and we can go down and proceed to line 96, and then proceed down further to line 99, which is the first change for promotion and marketing division, which is $75,000 each year in FY 24-25, and the same amount in the tails. This is half of what the governor proposed at $150,000. but for a similar for the same purpose. Line 101 is a cooperative grants. This is the DE only item at $200,000 per year, so 400 for each biennium. And in total for the general fund changes for protection, or for, excuse me, for promotion and marketing is 550,000 on line 103, and the same amount in the tails, 550,000 line 103. There are no non-general fund changes for promotion and marketing, so we can proceed now to agri. Line 154 is the changes to the agri program, and then following that will be the changes to agri. Line 155 is a increase to the undesignated area for agri. That increase in FY24-25 is $270,000. And the increase in FY26-27 is $6,958,000. Members will call on line 156. Agri is scheduled to sunset once this budget reaches the tails. This DE amendment extends the sunset by $10 million each year for a total of $20 million of the extension item of agri. Line 157 is a $2 million increase for agri livestock processing, which is $2 million for 24 and 25. This increase does not go into the tails. Line 159 is the governor's item for entrepreneurial support. The DE position is $100,000 per year, which is different than the governor. Line 162 represents the elimination of up to language in agri. The three programs, line 161 is the buy and set of payments for claims to backfill. This is a $2 million increase for that program, but specifically for backfilling claims in FY24 and 25, so $2 million total. And then line 162, line 163, and line 164 represents the elimination of up-to language in the previous agri rider. Those dollars are now as designated spending within agri, and those increases are as follows. Line 162, urban and youth agriculture, is now $1 million per year in 24 and 25, and also in the tails. Line 163 is the Good Food Access Program, which is $500,000 per year. Line 164, which is the Farm to School Program, which is $1 million each fiscal year. And that concludes the agri increases. If you'll go up to the top of this, the middle of the spreadsheet, back to the agri total, line 135 is the agri amounts and comparisons to base. So on line 135, you'll see that agri in FY24-25 is increasing $9,470,000 from base. And in the tails, there was no previous base, so the new amount for agri will be $32,158,000 versus the 24-25 base, which was $35,164,000, so slightly different than the previous base tails, proposed base tails. Line 165 is the first change for agreet. That is an increase of $250,000 per year to the Farm Business Management FBM Mail C program. Line 166 is where Forever Green was moved and then increased by $30,000 a year, or $60,000 a year one time. So the new amount for Forever Green is $690,000 in FY24-25, now housed within a greet, and $630,000 in the tails. Line 167 is an additional Forever Green item. It is $1 million now within a greet for Forever Green equipment. And then line 168, another agreed item added to the total, $500,000 each year, but only in FY24-25, so one-time funding for the Deep Winter Greenhouse Program. And that concludes the value-added area. Well, we can go on now to admin and financial assistance. The change items for admin and financial assistance start on line 228 is an increase for operations for the department, the maintain current service levels item. It's $5 million in FY24-25 and $6,022,000 in FY26-27. Line 229 is the RFA capacity increase. This is identical to the governor's proposal at $150,000 a year. Line 230 is an appropriation to the department for information technology modernization. This differs slightly different from the governor, but is similar in amount at $2 million, but the governor was at 2.4. Line 231 is the emerging farmer office expansion, which is $250,000 each year. Line 232 is the beginning farmer equipment and infrastructure grants. That is $250,000 each year for that change. Line 233 is a transfer to the Ag Emergency account at $1 million one time, only occurring in fiscal year 24. Line 234 is an increase to Second Harvest Heartland at $250,000 per year. This is the identical amount to the governor. The next item is line 236, which is the climate implementation coordinator at $150,000 per year in 24 and 25 and in 26 and 27. Line 238 is a grant through the department to the Good Acre Leaf Program at $100,000 in 24 and 25 each year, but no funding in the tails, so one time. Skipping down several lines, we'll see line 247, which is heritage oilseed research. That is $1 million each fiscal year, but only occurring one time. Line 248 is the meat processing training grants. That is $1 million total for the biennium in 24-25, but only occurring one time. Line 249 is the dairy program with an I, $3 million one time in fiscal year 24. Line 250 is for hemp fiber processing grants. That's $1 million each year in 24 and 25, but no funding in the tail, so one time. Line 251 is the Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council, or better known as MALC. That's a $100,000 increase from base in FY 24 and 25, and the same amount, identical amount, in 26 and 27. Line 252 is the Community Developmental Financial Institution Technical Assistance Grants, or CDFIs. That is $150,000 each fiscal year in 24 and 25. That number also continues into the tails. All told on line 254 are all totaled. For changes to admin financial assistance is $18,800,000, line 254, and then $8,622,000 in 26-27. Additionally, for admin and financial assistance, there is one non-general fund change, and that is line 267. This is the information technology modernization piece that is also a governor's change item. At $615,000 a year. Additionally, there was a change to a general fund statutory appropriation that it was in the previous tax bill. Line 276 deletes that statutory appropriation and rolls it into the session law DE amendment. And we can skip the Department of Ag total for a moment. We can do that at the end. The next agency is the Board of Animal Health. Change items begin on line 290. And on line 290 is the operating increase to maintain current service level at $498,000 in FY24-25 and then $664,000 in FY26-27. Line 291 is the Ag Emergency Preparedness Response Appropriation. That is $360,000 of an increase to that appropriation in FY24-25, and the identical amount occurs in the tails. Line 293 is an appropriation from fiscal note data for board modifications at $6,000 each year in 24 and 25 and into the tails as well. That concludes changes for Board of Animal Health. And AURI has two changes. Those occur on line 316 through 16. This is a COLA operating adjustment at $100,000 each fiscal year in 24 and 25 and into the tails. Additionally, there is another change item on 317, which is $1 million for capital equipment in FY24 only. So that's a one-time change. The final agency within the committee's jurisdiction is the Deed Office of Broadband Grants. And there are two changes there. Line 331 is $50 million each fiscal year to be deposited in the border-to-border account, so $100 million total. That occurs one time and not in the tails. And additionally, line 332, there's a carve-out of that amount. So of the $50 million, $20 million is for the low-density pilot program, and that occurs only one time in 24-25. Totals for all the agencies begin on line 335. And so I'll describe the above base increases for the various departments. Line 336, the Department of Ag received a $39,416,000 increase from base in 24-25 and a $36,750,000 increase in 26-27. Line 337 is the Board of Animal Health. That's a $1,230,000 increase in 24-25 and $1,396,000 increase in 26-27. AURI is a $1.2 million increase in 24-25 and a $200,000 increase in 26-27. The Deed Office of Broadband, the only change there is in FY24-25 by $100 million. The remaining $350,000 is the operations for the Office of Broadband. Additionally, there were some revenue adjustments with a dedication of fees. Those revenue adjustments total $7 million on line 343, $7,654,000. And the same occurs in FY26-27. Because of the general fund loss, it must be accounted within the committee's target. So on line 344, it shows the total net general fund change, which in column Q is $148 million, and column S is $40 million. The combined total of the committee's two targets as designated by Ways and Means is $148 million in FY24-25, and FY26-27, it was $40 million. So this DE amendment has exhausted the resources through the budget resolution. I won't spend a lot of time, Madam Chair, on lines 357, 358. These are just revenue, non-general fund revenue adjustments to change items that I've already kind of gone through. Just want to point out one, which is line 359, which is the PFAS pesticide registration oversight, which is data from a fiscal note that causes a reduction in ag fund revenue at $803,000 a year. Additionally, on line 362 is the fertilizer tonnage fee increase, which is $750,000 of additional ag fund revenue. And that occurs starting in FY25 and goes into FY26 and 27. Line 364 is the grain indemnity fund. This is data from the fiscal note that shows increases to the ag fund of $11.5 million in FY25. And then that revenue increase decreasing significantly to $150,000 in FY26 and then $137,000 in FY27. Additionally, on line 371 is the food license modernization. I talked about that before. This was the general fund item that caused the general fund revenue loss, which the committee must account for in the target. Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough. The only other items I would point out would be the various transfers, but those are just the way are just a tabulation of funds moving between funds. But I would say that on line 394, I provided a Agri program detail, just that lays out the riders within Agri and shows them as designated versus undesignated spending. In previous iterations of Agri, there was what's called allowable spending, which uses up-to language to allow the department for certain programs. Just wanted to point out that on lines 409 through 414, in columns P and R, that the allowable spending is now gone and has been moved up into a designated amount, which the department has in the other areas of Agri. So, Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Savory. Members, any questions so far? Okay, next we'll go to Kobe Sullivan, who will walk through the language of the DE.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Colby Sullivan with the Nonpartisan House Research Department. And I will be walking through the Delete Everything Amendment, the Chair's DE Amendment for House File 2278, which you should have in your packets today. It's time and date stamp, top left corner, March 27th at 8:34 p.m. This, just a quick note, this is an amendment to House File 2278, which is the Chair's bill proposing supplemental budget items for the Board of Animal Health, but as amended, this bill 2278 will become the Omnibus Agriculture and Broadband Finance Bill. So you'll notice as we work through the DE amendment, many of the provisions in here come from the Chair's House File 2679, which was the Governor's Agriculture and Broadband Finance Bill. And I won't spend time highlighting those items, as members have already reviewed that bill and have already had a presentation of the governor's items at an earlier committee meeting, but I'm happy to answer any questions that members might have. So Article 1 is on page 1, and these are the appropriations or the authority to spend money from the general fund and the remediation fund. And they correspond, the language in this article corresponds to the budget items that Mr. Savory has just walked through in the spreadsheet. They provide authority to spend money for those purposes as well as rider language that limits how the department may spend the money. So I'm skipping over a lot of the riders that Mr. Savory has already covered through the spreadsheet. I'll jump ahead to page 13. And starting on line 13.13 is money for pass-through grants from the Department of Agriculture to Second Harvest Heartland to purchase commodities from Minnesota farmers and processors for distribution at food shelves. Members will recall Representative Frederick's House File 1554 from earlier this session that continued funding for this existing pass-through grant. The language is... except for the numbers, it's the same as in Representative Frederick's bill, with one change on page 14. For each of the three types of funding, for the surplus fruits, vegetables, and other ag commodities, and for pork, poultry, beef, dry legumes, cheese, and other proteins, there's language now that says that Second Harvest may acquire these products from food hubs. So you'll see, for example, on line 14.112, previously, this language read that the commodities must be acquired from Minnesota producers and processors. Now food hubs are added as well. And food hubs are entities that aggregate food produced by a number of farmers. And so that language appears again on 14.27. And then you'll also notice starting on 14.30, of the total amount awarded to Second Harvest Heartland each year, at least $100,000 would need to be used to purchase eligible items from food hubs that aggregate food produced by emerging farmers. And jumping ahead to page 32, section 6, Mr. Savory mentioned the funding in the Chair's DE amendment for the meat processing training and retention incentives. The language in Section 6 is the corresponding direction about how to award that money, and it's from Representative Sensormura's House File 2562. Then on the next page, page 33, we start Article 2. So these are the statutory changes, finance-related statutory changes that are included in this bill. The first section is from the governor's proposal, so I will skip that. And I will move ahead to page 35. The top of page 35 is section 6. This is from Representative Purcell's House File 1034, and it expands eligibility for co-op development grants from the Department of Agriculture to include co-ops with non-patron members, so long as the non-patron members do not have voting rights. Then moving on to page 36, again, I'm skipping all the sections that were in the governor's bill. And moving forward to section 8 on page 36 at the bottom, starting on line 36.27. This is from the chair's House File 1057, and it has to do with the Down Payment Assistance Grant Program. On line 37.9, this language requires the Department of Agriculture to collect additional data and report additional data regarding the recipients of those grants. Then continuing on page 37, section 9, Soil Health Financial Assistance Program. This is from Representative Purcell's House File 1316 as amended. And it effectively replaces the existing pilot program with a permanent program in statute. Moving on then to page 41, starting on line 41.6, section 14, registration prohibited. This is Representative Hansen's House File 1150, which prohibits the Department of Agriculture from approving or registering pesticide products that contain PFAS. Moving ahead then to page 48, beginning with section 25 on line 48.12. These are provisions from the chair's House File 2946, as requested by the Department of Agriculture, changes to the department's hemp development program. That's sections 25 on 48, and on page 49, sections 26, background check, and section 27, rulemaking. Moving on to the next page, page 50, the top of that page, line 50.4, section 28, hemp fiber processing equipment grants. This language comes from the chair's House File 2773. Then on page 52, section 33, which begins on line 52.4, this is from Representative Hansen's House File 911, which would increase membership of the Board of Animal Health and change the qualifications for the members of the board, as well as the appointment of the director, and eliminates Senate confirmation of board members. Next section, section 34, this is a new section, technical addition. The Department of Agriculture and the governor proposed eliminating an existing section that appropriates money received from the federal government for chronic wasting disease response to the Department of Agriculture. This section 34 on line 53.15 is just a corresponding cleanup of a separate statute that makes reference to the statute that would be repealed later in this article. On the bottom of 53, we start a number of sections from Representative Tabke's House File 1477. These sections, members will recall from earlier this session, modify the bioincentive program administered by the Department of Agriculture that provides incentive payments to producers of eligible biofuels, renewable chemicals, and biomass thermal energy. So the first section is section 36 on the bottom of 53. And these sections continue through pages 54 and 55. All of 56, all of 57, and the top of page 58. And Mr. Savory mentioned that the DE amendment includes $1 million a year to make up for prior pro rata payments the department issued due to a shortage of funding. The language that I've just talked about that's from Representative Tabke's bill requires the department, if a producer applies for that deficiency payment, the department will award that money using the $2 million appropriated in this act. Then on continuing on page 58, about halfway down, section 42, report incentive programs. This is also a change to the bioincentive program statutes, but it's from Representative Hansen's House File 475, and it would require recipients of bioincentive payments to provide additional information to the Department of Agriculture and the agency, the department, would in turn report that information to the legislature. Then on page 59, starting on 59.10, a series of sections from Representative Cha's House File 2718 as amended, which established a new grain indemnity program for Minnesota farmers. That's section 43 and through the rest of page 59. It's all of pages 60 and 61, all of pages 62 and 63, pages 64 and 65. And I should note, this language is as amended in committee, so amendments that were adopted in committee to this language are reflected or should be in this language. Page 66, all of page 67 is still Representative Cha's grain indemnity language. All through the top of page 68, where then we have section 50. This is extension. This is Representative Purcell's House File 1316 as amended, also on the topic of the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program. This is just a technical change that extends the existence of the pilot program until the final report required under that program is submitted to the legislature. Then, starting on 68.6, section 51, this is a modified version of Representative Hansen's House File 2472 regarding regulation of seed treated with a systemic pesticide. Representative Hansen's bill would require the department to develop and implement a program for the regulation of such seed. This language requires the department to prepare a proposal to regulate systemic pesticide-treated seed and to submit that proposal to the legislature no later than February 1st, 2024. Page 69, the top, section 52, this is the feral pigs and mink report from Representative Hansen's House File 2387. The repealer on 69.12, these are all sections of current law that would be eliminated under this bill. These provisions were pulled in from a number of the bills that I've already mentioned, governor's bills and member bills. The one thing to note on 69.16, the repeal of 41A.21 subdivision 6, that's the statutory appropriation for the Oriented Strand Board Production Incentive Program that Mr. Savory mentioned that was added via the tax bill in 2021. Then finally, Article 3, the last article, starts on the bottom of page 69. This is the broadband development appropriations. Moving on to page 70, Mr. Savory has already talked about the amounts. You will note on line 70.11, he mentioned accurately that there's an increase in the first year of $50 million over base and $50 million in the second year. The reason that on 70.11 it says $75 million is that last year the legislature established a base for fiscal 2024 of $25 million. So the new 50 plus the base equals $75 million in the first year. And then the rest of the language is from Representative Purcell's House File 2313, her DE1 amendment that was reviewed in committee earlier this session, which increases the max grant amount for broadband development projects. It makes the lower population density grant program permanent. And I think that's it, members. And I've reached the end of the DE1 amendment. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
Members, any clarifying questions to nonpartisan staff? Seeing none, we'll move to Representative Anderson.
No, move ahead.
Okay. We'll move to testimonies. The first testifier we have is Commissioner Tom Peterson. And if testifiers can keep their comments, remarks to under 3 minutes, we would appreciate that very much. Commissioner Tom Peterson, if you can identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Chair Vang, members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and really appreciate working with Chair Vang as she developed her budget and worked through everything. Many of the pieces in this bill do reflect the governor's priorities in the bill that we've walked through and presented to you before. Items include meat processing, trade, soil health, emerging farmers, ag emergency, grain indemnity, which we really appreciate seeing that in there. The climate coordinator are all things that we think are really important. I also just note that, as the chair said, many of these things that we had in our bill, whether it's for evergreen or soil health grants, we're excited to see in the clean water proposals, and hope that that holds together as we go through the process, because it can build a nice package for agriculture. One of the big things, just to get to the point in this, is the agri. And if you look at the tails in agri, that is something that's very important, that's been in this committee for a long time. Remember, we used to make, not that long ago, a $70 million investment in that, and that's been whittled down over the years. But precursors to this committee, Representative Anderson might have been there, I can't remember, thought as those payments went away at that time, our budget was 1/3 of 1% of the state's budget, and those ethanol payments were 40% of that budget. So what a lot of the stakeholders and everybody did, and legislators, was to try to keep that money in agriculture to help add value and help us with a lot of these different projects, whether it was biofuels, value-added agriculture. There was a big push for livestock investment grants. So we have to continue, Madam Chair and committee members, I hope, to work on that and preserve agri, keep those tails, because they've done a lot of good. We would not have the farm to school, the good food access, or the urban ag grants if we did not have agri, because having agri allowed chairs back in the time to create those programs at a lower level and then build them up from the scratch. So I appreciate working that with Madam Chair, and within the target and the things that you've come up with. I also appreciate the work to help us with our structural integrity of our agency and how we do business. Just like any other business, our agency at the department has been affected by inflation. And so hiring people, keeping people, those type of things, all the things that we have to buy as an agency are operating costs. So the operating adjustments, investments in IT and other pieces are incredibly important to the department. I think, there's a couple of things that are not in the governor's budget, but I think are very important, whether it's investing in our dairy program. I've talked about our dairy farmers struggling right now, and we have an opportunity to help them in a meaningful way. The cooperative development grants is something the department supported putting back in the budget, although with no funding, a couple of years ago. The community development financial institution piece, Madam Chair, that's also a very important and interesting piece that can help many of our farmers. I also just want to just continue to work with members of the committee on work on the systemic pesticide piece. I think there's some interesting pieces in there as we look at the verification of need, or how that would work and how we would study that and go forth. I also look at that, I forget what page it's on, but the section 4 of that piece where it talks about things we should study on systemic pesticides. I also think we should study what happens if we don't have them too, or what farmers are going to use to control the weeds, and would they be worse or would they be better? But I think that's an important piece that, as we go through the process, that we consider all aspects of that in what kind of tools farmers would have. And then also on the PFAS piece, we know that that's an important piece, and we're continuing to work on that and understand that as we move forward. So, Madam Chair, I appreciate all the work that you put into this, and the committee and staff, and we're ready to continue to work with you as we move forward in the process. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Next testifier is Steve Morse, Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. And then I'll also call the next testifier, if you can also be on standby at the testifying table, Patrick Murray, Executive Director of Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. And Stu Laurie from Minnesota Farmers Union. If you guys can also walk to the testifying table so we can go through the process quickly. Steve Morse, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Steve Morse, I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Environmental Partnership, statewide coalition of more than 70 environmental conservation organizations. And I'm here just to make a few comments. Number one, we really like some of the policies you have in this bill. We think The policies around PFAS and PFAS and ag chemicals, the question about seeds and treated seeds and how we manage those things is very important to our environment going forward. But the main point I'd like to make is I appreciate all the work that you've been through, the hearings that you've had, all the programs that have been brought for your review, and all the heightened expectations that have been brought to you. That being said, it's a little bit of a shock sometimes when those heightened expectations run into the limitations of a budget target. And as much as there are really good things in here, we really feel that the budget target that this committee has is lacking. And we know that's beyond the jurisdiction of the chair and this committee. But let me just say that today, as we sit here, this bill does a lot of things for watershed. It's a watershed moment for agriculture at this point. We need to be supporting emerging farmers, direct marketing, specialty crop growers, developing farmers, and developing the crops of the future that are going to protect our farmers, our communities, as well as our resources. We think this is a watershed time to look at new avenues, new adventures. And this bill does some of that, but we would suggest we'd like to see it do more than that. And so this budget target really doesn't meet the demands of today. And what we are suggesting that it's time for this committee, as well as leadership in the House, to take another look at the targets that have been laid out for this jurisdiction. Need to look at the ag, the food, and our soil and water needs going forward into the future, and assess how some tweaks can be made. We have unusually early budget targets, and we believe there is time that those can still be worked on. And so my overall request is please look at the amount that's been laid out for you for a target and take that up with your leadership, and we hope that that can be expanded a bit. We need something that more addresses the needs of today. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve Morris. Patrick Murray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just before we get going here and I start my testimony, Patrick Murray, I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. I do have a board member from our association, so I wanted to just do a real quick upfront. Thank you for the bill. Thank you for all the work that the committee has put into the bill. There's many, many good things in the bill, from the border-to-border broadband funding, to the soil health grant program, to the cooperative development grant program. Mm-hmm. Certainly supportive of all of those things, but what I wanted to talk about and have our board member who's here in town from Cottonwood, Minnesota focus on is one bill that as it relates to the systemic pesticide treated seed. So if I can defer the rest of my time to Ashley Runholt, she is thank you, Stu. Yes. Have a seat. Ashley is a board director on our association, but she also, again, came in from Cottonwood today. She works for Cottonwood Oil Cooperative. She's an agronomy sales manager, and she actually was up here last week for our day on the Hill, and she said, I want to come back and talk a little bit more about agriculture and treated seed, especially this provision here in the bill. So I'm going to turn it over to her and just let her cover some of those bases that, as an organization, we have some concerns with that provision in the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ashley Runholt, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Ashley Runholt. I'm from Cottonwood Co-op Oil Company in Cottonwood, Minnesota. And then my husband and I also are generational farmers on our current land that we farm. On a side note, I just have to point out that the young girl that's in the office is behaving way better than my daughter would be right now. There's a couple of issues that are concerning to me as the systemic pesticide seed treatment bill is currently laid out. First and foremost, I'm going to kind of summarize a hypothetical scenario, and we're going to assume a couple of things inside this scenario. So we're going to assume first and foremost that ag retailers have the appropriate staff, which we currently do not. We're facing some historical staff reductions in all of ag retail, which is unfortunate, but kind of the nature of the beast. We're also going to assume that every seed dealer in the state of Minnesota has upgraded their seed treaters to enclosed seed treatments. That is part of the federal label for the EPA that if we're treating neonics, that they have to be an enclosed seed treatment, especially in corn. We're also going to assume that the commissioner certifies that we have to certify these acres within 30 days of planting. So the time frame right now, we're going to pretend that in 1 month from now, we're going to plant corn. And then this hypothetical scenario, Cottonwood Co-op manages about 625 fields So 625 fields would need to go to the commissioner to sign off saying yes, there is a need, or no, there is not a need. The commissioner in this hypothetical scenario would give us 2 weeks, so we would submit it 30 days before. He would approve within 2 weeks. So right now we have 5 foot of snow on the field, so in this hypothetical scenario, I can go out and scout the 625 fields that we manage, and then I would dig down 3 to 5 feet to find the dormant bugs that do not come out of dormancy until about 3 weeks. Depending on soil conditions, it's around 45 degrees that they come out of dormancy and then come up to the surface. So at that time, we can certify, the commissioner says, yes, you've certified that there's a need for pesticides, so you can go ahead and go forward. So at that point, we would treat our seed. Simultaneously in ag retail, we have a ton of things going on. So in that same time period, we're applying fertilizer, we're loading fertilizer, we're applying chemicals, we're loading chemicals, we're delivering liquid fertilizer, we're also delivering beans. Currently, we're delivering corn right now to ensure that the farmers have the seed when they need to plant. So my main concern is just the, I don't know how this is going to play out. And it's concerning. It appears that depending on what the commissioner decides and how the legislation is figured out, it could indirectly end up being a ban. And that would make Minnesota kind of an isolated incident. And then on top of that, I don't think right now we can't get untreated corn seed. So currently we treat maybe a quarter of our beans, but all of our corn is treated because that's how we get it from the manufacturer. On a side note, the seed treaters are at least $250,000 that every retail and seed dealer in the state of Minnesota would have to purchase before 2026. As a complete segue off of this, as a mother and a wife of a farmer, I cannot stress enough to everybody in this room that we're not actively trying to pollute anything. We're using BPMs, we're using IPM thresholds. We are extremely careful and diligent with what we put on the ground, how we put it in the ground. And our goal as a farmer, at least my husband and my father-in-law's goal, and many of my farmers' goals, is not today and not this year and not even next year. It's generations from now. As an emerging farmer group, it's very crucial to us that we're making sure that we're using the correct management techniques to ensure that not only is our soil safe for my kids to play on and our water safe for us to drink, but also that my children can inherit a farm that is more productive and more capable of producing a higher yield than what we have it today and more sustainable for today.
Thank you, Ashley Ronaut. Stu Laurie.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I'm the Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And on behalf of our members, I want to thank you, Chair Vang, and everyone here for including key priorities in your DE to HF 2278, putting together a spending bill. As Mr. Morse said, when worthy requests far outpace the funding available is a big challenge, and it requires difficult choices. Of course, that means that some things that we requested weren't entirely funded. That's the nature of the hard work that we do, and we really appreciate what you've included in this bill and seeing our members' priorities reflected here. I think some of the things that you have here are going to make our ag economy work better for farmers, make it more distributed, make it more resilient and more fair. So I'll talk briefly about a couple provisions. First, the grain indemnity account is first and foremost a top priority for us. You're talking about that in this committee. committee because we have a broken system that's having devastating consequences for family farmers. You heard in this committee from Marty and Lisa Phillips, small farmers. They farm 420 acres, mostly rented land. They lost $112,000 in the pipeline bankruptcy in 2021. In global food processing, they stand to lose another $100,000. It has wiped out their credit rating, erased years of farm income, and introduced for them real questions about whether or not they can continue farming. You also heard from Brian Herbst, who lost $350,000 in the pipeline bankruptcy. And the department's been on the record talking about how farms have gone bankrupt waiting for payouts from the bond. If you choose to make this law, it's not easy, often easy to talk about the impact of complex policies, but if you make this law this year, it will save farms next year, if history is any guide, and 20 years from now, it'll save farms. So thank you for having that important conversation and spending so much time on that this year. Second, meat processing continues to be a top priority for our members. We are so excited to see Representative Chan's bill to expand the successful value-added program, Representative Nelson's bill to add a meat processing liaison to the Department of Agriculture, and Representative Sensenbrenner's bill expand opportunities in the industry for new folks who are attending the technical training programs at Central Lakes and Ridgewater. Final highlight, I think there's a real highlight in this bill and the support for beginning and emerging farmers. The expansion of the Emerging Farmers Office, down payment assistance, funding for new market opportunities like LEAF, farmland transition, and expanding the role of farm advocates. That's going to help make sure that everyone has opportunities in agriculture in our state. And for more things that we're really excited about, I'll refer to longer written testimony, which is included for the committee. A couple brief things that I'd love to highlight that I value the opportunity to continue to work on. We continue to have concerns about the expansion of the Board of Animal Health. We've testified on that before. That's a board that makes really devastating decisions for family farmers, and removing the requirement that folks who serve on that board be farmers or veterinarians is concerning to us. Really welcome further conversations on that. And then would love to continue the conversation on soil health and recognize that that might cross jurisdictions, but that's one thing that I'd love to find an opportunity to increase funding for. So again, really appreciate all your work on this. Recognize it reflects a lot of work and hard decisions, and I'd be hugely eager to talk about answer questions or talk about anything from my testimony or longer written comments in committee or offline. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Stu Lurie. Next is Chris Cohen from Pesticide Action Network. We have Saina Pagan-Kule, Communications Director from Minnesota Farmers Market Association, and Alex Trinnell from Minnesota Corn Growers Association. If you guys could walk your way through the testifying table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Cohen. I'm a contract lobbyist with the Pesticide Action Network. And we've also been working with the Midwest Farmers of Color Collective and other immigrant farmer groups, and also work within the Minnesota Environmental Partnership Pollinator and Wildlife Cluster. Just some thoughts about the bill and the committee's action. I thank the chair and all the members for all the hard work that they've done in putting this bill together. It's kind of amazing how it all works out every 2 years, but thank you so much for all your efforts and your input. And I'd just like to say that I think this bill reflects some of the thoughts that I have when I'm doing my work for the Pesticide Action Network. And that is that the Ag Committee is for all Minnesotans. And that, of course, includes farmers, but also non-farmers like myself. And it includes farmers of all situations, whether it be the big commodity farmers or small specialty crop farmers. They can be in the city, the suburbs, the exurbs, or in the country. They can be conventional. They can be organic. And we should hope and promote that these farmers do their best and that we all do our best to keep the land healthy, the air fresh, and the water clean. So I'd like to thank the committee for all the provisions that help emerging farmers and farmers of color. I'll chime in with what Steve Morris said with MEP that I think we're seeing some of this already, that going forward, we need to have more creative problem solving as a remedy for the relatively small target that the Ag committees have had to work with. And we need that because There are so many ag issues and non-ag issues that go through this committee that is called the Agriculture Committee, but there are non-ag proponents to it, like, for example, the non-ag use of pesticides that touch so many lives. So we need more protections for the land, for the water, and for pollinators, wildlife, and human life. So thank you for the work that you've done on the pollinator account, the PFAs and pesticides, and the treated seed provisions in the bill. And I was really happy to hear the woman who came up from Cottonwood County and hear her concerns, because to me that's the beginning of a conversation, and that's a conversation that we're looking forward to having and see what we, at least in my mind, what we can do better in addition to what's going on now. So thank you for being here and sharing that. And just in closing, when you see me, I'm somebody who thinks that we're all neighbors to each other, and we all live upstream and downstream from each other one way or another. So having an ag committee that creates laws and policies that reflect a proper balance of rights and responsibilities that keep our land healthy, our air fresh, and our water clean is what we should all be working on. And that helps keep our neighbors all good neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris Cohen. Sina, if you can identify yourself before the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Sina Plagenkuhl, Communications Director with the Minnesota Farmers Market Association. On behalf of MFMA and our record high now of 373 farmers markets and their over 10,000 vendors and thousands of direct marketing farmers, so many who are emerging and beginning farmers, I'm here today to ask for support for our farmers markets. Thank you to Representative Liz Lee and Senator Kunesh for championing our farmers market support bill to allow up to 10,000 per farmers markets in Minnesota, House File 2787. This funding would be utilized to support infrastructure, training, establishing SNAP EBT at all markets in Minnesota to ensure our hungriest families can have access to fresh, healthy food, among other investments. Given the $17.5 billion surplus for our state, a one-time infusion of funds for all farmers markets would make a tremendous impact and allow for long-term improvements. For our Senate hearing, in less than 24 hours, we had nearly 200 farmers markets, and organizations sign on to support this bill. Demand is there to support our farmers that rely on farmers markets to sell their products, and utilizing a one-time infusion of funds would have year-long lasting impact. We hope to work with the committee to support our farmers markets and the thousands of producers and entrepreneurs that demand on them for their business. To have funding for farmers markets, food hubs, businesses, and food safety training infrastructure needs, that would maximize the impact of this investment. Investing in farmers markets, it's like a sign of spring. Producers in this sector are the most diverse in ethnicity and gender, the youngest, employ more soil health and conservation practices, and are actually growing in the numbers of farmers on our land. I humbly ask for your support in working to ensure our farmers markets are invested in, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Sina. Alex Chernell, if you can identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, Chair Vang and members of the committee, my name is Alex Chernell, and I'm on the policy team with the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. MCGA represents nearly 7,000 family farm members around the state, and thank you for the opportunity to address a few of the items that were in the DE1 today. The first item that I wanted to focus on is we strongly support the $3 million per year for the Biofuels Infrastructure Grant Program, and thank you to Representative Frederick for carrying that bill this year. This grant program will help offset some of the upfront costs of fuel retailers face to begin offering higher blends of biofuels, specifically E15, which is often marketed as unleaded 88. And by helping to offset some of these upfront costs, the retailers will be able to offer a higher octane fuel that is cleaner burning, contributes to reduced air pollution without sacrificing vehicle efficiency. Last year, unleaded 88 sold for 17 cents per gallon, less compared to regular 87. And while there is still lots of room to grow through this investment, Minnesota will be able to approach nearly 500 stations offering unleaded 88, which is the highest number of locations in the nation. The second item that I wanted to highlight was around the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program. I know given the target that the committee had a lot to balance, I know Chair Vang mentioned at the beginning about some clean water dollars that are available, and we're really excited about that as well. But given the high volume of funding requests that the pilot program received, we would like to work with the committee going forward to find additional ways to get additional general fund dollars into that program and really begin to start adopting these soil health practices on a wider scale across the state. And then the last item I just wanted to mention is around the proposal in this bill that would direct the department to craft a framework for the coming for next session for a new systemic pesticide treated seed regulation program. We did highlight some of our concerns in written testimony earlier this session, specifically around the formal verification and need process that was included. And we would welcome further discussion with the committee on this proposal as it moves forward. Thank you, Chair Vang, for the opportunity to testify today, and we look forward to working with you as this bill moves forward.
Thank you, Alex. We have Leah Gardner from Hunger Solutions, Laura Schraber, policy organizer from the Land Stewardship Project, and Erin McKee, Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. Leah Gardner, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members. My name is Leah Gardner, and I am with Hunger Solutions Minnesota. And I look at this budget through a lens of making sure that we have access to food and agriculture for those who need it most. And I first want to thank you for investing in programs that do improve access to food across Minnesota, including the Farm to School program, LEAF, Urban Ag, and the Good Food Access program. Like many have said, I realized that you had to work within a very tight budget target. But should the opportunity arise, I want to just speak for a minute to the value of investing more into the Good Food Access program. Minnesota is among the worst in the country in terms of what are often referred to as food deserts or places that have low food access, and that is both in rural and urban communities. At the last estimate, which is probably lower than today, we had 340,000 Minnesotans that lacked both income and that faced both income and distance barriers to accessing food in Minnesota. When we established the Good Food Access Program and were able to begin supporting technical assistance and equipment grants, the program has proven successful year over year, and critical support has been made available to retailers around the state, but demand has far exceeded resources available each year as well. And there's also a missed opportunity that would only be able to be realized if there were something closer to the $2 million figure. And that's the opportunity to invest one-time money into providing access to capital for food retailers. If we were able to invest one time into a revolving loan, we would be able to realize something that we've been trying to do since this program came into being. And that is to not just support existing food retailers, but allow new retailers to come in where maybe they have already gone away and are sorely needed. With that access to capital, we would be able to, with one-time money, support new retailers emerging in communities that need it most right now. So I thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Leah. Laura Schraber.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Laura Schraber. I'm a policy organizer with the Land Stewardship Project. Thank you so much for your hard work this legislative session to build a balanced and innovative budget that will make tangible impacts for our farmers and rural communities. Regarding the DE amendment, LSP is especially excited about the inclusion of the meat processing liaison position and small meat processor training grants. Thank you to Representative Nelson for your leadership there. And thank you to Representative Purcell for being a champion for Farm to School and to the chair for including $100 million for this important program. Also, the Good Acres LEAF program, increased funding for the down payment assistance program and the Emerging Farmers Office, additional funding for the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program, hemp processing grants, continuous living cover, supply chain development grants, the Grain Indemnity Fund, and Farm Advocate Services. As I have limited time, I'm going to focus primarily on things we would like to see adjusted or built upon, I encourage you to look at our letter, which was shared with the committee and we'll email out afterward. So some areas that we would like to welcome the opportunity to work on is LSP and the Midwest Farmers of Color Collective have offered language for the Down Payment Assistance Grant Program that ensures the program is accessible and equitable to those who need the dollars most. We'd be happy to follow up with Chair Vang on this afterward as well. We'd like to see the base budget amount for the Emerging Farmers Office remain stable so that they can sustainably expand year over year with staffing needs. But thank you for the increased amount there. Additionally, for farm to school, this last year we saw $4.25 million and one-time federal infusion of funds, and those dollars were quickly used up. So thank you for the increase to $1 million, but to really keep momentum going for this, ask the committee to consider further investment and also to support a full-time coordinator position at MDA for this program. Funding for our farmers markets, like Sina shared, many of these markets are incredibly important for our emerging and beginning farmers, since so many of them rely on direct marketing to build their customer base. For the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program, we know there's potentially other dollars in the Clean Water Fund, so look forward to seeing potentially more investment there. But also there is high demand and high barriers to implementing new soil health practices. So we ask that also these funds are limited to practices and equipment that truly do build soil health. So like managed rotational grazing, perennial cropping systems, and seeing those valued more within the program. To be clear, we understand the reality of the budget target and hope there might yet be an increase to it. And we also, though, encourage you to consider repurposing some dollars for parts of the industry that have abundant private investments to ensure that our small and mid-sized farmers, emerging and beginning farmers, local processors and others are invested in to start or transition their business, build a resilient food system, and steward our land, air, and water. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Aaron, if you can identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. My name is Erin McKee, and I am the Community Food Systems Program Director at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. And as many others have already said, I'd like to recognize the lower ag target than we had hoped for puts you in a difficult position. So thank you so much for doing the hard work to try to balance all the different priorities with so many great programs on offer this legislative session. First off, I'm here representing my interest in Farm to School. I'm on the Farm to School Leadership Team and the Minnesota Farm to Early Care Network Advisory Group as well. And first of all, I'd like to thank you so much for including early care in the MDA Farm to School and Early Care Grant Program. I love that they can be eligible applicants for this grant, and if we can allow our littlest eaters the ability to benefit from farm fresh products, it'll be huge for them because they depend on those settings for a huge proportion of their nutritional intake per day, and it's a window of opportunity to influence their taste preferences. So thank you so much for that. And we'd also like to thank you for your increase to the Farm to School and Early Care grant funding and for including that increase in the base as well. As Laura mentioned, the demand is huge, and there was a one-time federal increase to that funding for this current cycle, and they still had more demand than what was available. So they had $5.5 million in demand for the $4 million on offer. So if more money does become available, we would love to see an increase there. Right now, farmers and schools are scaling up to use up that $4 million in funding, and they would love to see that effort be able to continue into the future and those relationships that they build to have a sustainable impact. So we'd love to leverage the momentum of that federal investment and signal the sustainable support to plan around for the future. We've seen some other states like Oregon and Michigan investing something like $10 million. Oregon invested $10 million in 2019, and Michigan invested $9 million in 2023 in a similar program. We'd love to see Minnesota match that investment, or at least work our way up to it. We also would urge you to consider if there is space to support that full-time MDA farm-to-school coordinator position that was included in the Senate omnibus bill, and we really see that that providing crucial statewide coordination and support to farmers, grantees, and eligible applicants for the grant program, and it could ensure the success going forward. And we also just would highlight, if there's other funding available, the regional coordinators that were included in the bill that Representative Purcell championed. You heard from Amy Hagg, who is a coordinator for Dasso, Cokato, Litchfield, and Hutchinson school districts, and she talked about how she was able to leverage with her three small districts. They scaled their local purchasing from $0 to $825,000 worth of local food purchasing in just 3 years. We would love to see stories like Amy's replicated across the state, and we do think that investing in regional coordinators would have a huge impact. And it's also something that's scalable, so even a pilot amount would allow us to document that impact, and a little would go a long way. But I want to thank you so much for your work and for your support so far and for continuing further investment in this important program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Erin. The next three testifiers is Caitlin Bemis from Minnesota Farm Bureau, and Dr. Mitch Hunter for Evergreen Initiative, and Laura Lemke. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Bemis, and I'm the Public Policy Specialist at Minnesota Farm Bureau, where I have the privilege of representing nearly 30,000 farmers and ranchers from across the state. And we also recognize that it's really difficult to put together a budget given the circumstances. So we really appreciate Chair Vang and the committee's work on this bill. First, thank you for the creation of the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program. The pilot program created last year was very successful, and we are looking forward to expanding this into a full program. Farmers overwhelmingly requested to implement these soil health practices on their farms, and there wasn't enough financial support to meet the demands. With that being said, we are disappointed by the amount of funding for the DE for this program. I'd also like to vocalize our strong support for the investment into the Agri program, specifically around the biofuel infrastructure piece. Expanding the sale of higher octane, cleaner burning biofuels will help lower carbon emissions in transportation, lower fuel prices for consumers, and support farmers across the state. Minnesota Farm Bureau has concerns surrounding the proposal to regulate treated seed. This is a vital tool for our farmers who utilize these products and lessen the need for sprayed pesticides. Developed through our grassroots policy process, Minnesota Farm Bureau believes that the state general fund dollars should be the only source of revenue for a grain indemnity fund. Through this guidance, we are not supportive of our producer-funded indemnity program. While the bill currently proposes an opt-out provision function through the refund process, we believe that a better process would allow a farmer to choose to participate before paying into the fund. We also appreciate the investment into meat processing, egg emergency account, and vet diagnostic laboratory, crippled and destroyed livestock account, crop compensation damage, broadband, and mental health resources. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we look forward to working with you on these topics moving forward.
Thank you, Caitlin. Dr. Mitch Hunter, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Vang and members of the committee, my name is Mitch Hunter, and I'm the Associate Director of the Forever Green Initiative. On behalf of the Forever Green Initiative at the University of Minnesota, I would like to thank you for including funding for our work in House File 2278. This investment will help us deliver new crops that protect soil and water while driving new economic opportunities for growers and industry. This is a win-win-win for farmers, the environment, and rural communities across Minnesota. We are especially thankful for the inclusion of base funding. This is our most critical need, because developing and launching new crops is a long-term endeavor. The base funding provided in this bill will help stabilize key scientific personnel, including our plant breeders, many of whom currently lack dedicated funding. In addition, the funding provided for equipment and infrastructure will help us accelerate the pace of discovery, achieve even more with state research dollars, including the Clean Water Fund dollars that the chair referenced, and will also help us secure more large federal grants. We recognize that the committee had a very difficult task accommodating many worthy funding requests with the limited resources available, and we hope that the legislative leadership will find a way to provide additional funds to address the many challenges and opportunities in the committee's jurisdiction. So we look forward to working with you on that going forward. I just want to highlight that Forever Green crops are a market-based approach to improving Minnesota's environment, and our vision is that they will go forward and spawn new industries that can operate without financial support from the state. However, public support is needed to achieve this vision. Research at the University of Minnesota was critical for the development of Minnesota's major crop industries, including hybrid corn, soybean, and wheat. Forever green crops are the next generation. So we appreciate the committee's support and thank you for your work.
Thank you, Dr. Hunter. Laura, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Vang and members of the committee. My name is Laura Lemke, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. We are a 116-year-old nonprofit voluntary membership organization, which represents the state's grain elevator and feed mill industry. I'm here today to speak in opposition to the Grain Indemnity Fund appropriation contained in House File 2278's DE amendment. Through written testimony, I have previously shared with this committee our concerns and opposition to the creation of a grain indemnity fund. In our opinion, this legislation focuses quite heavily on protections for farmers while ignoring and reducing regulatory framework that would minimize or prevent future insolvencies for grain buyers and warehouses. Without a strong regulatory system for the grain industry, the proposed indemnity fund will be utilized on a frequent basis to compensate producers for their losses, creating a revolving door of withdrawals and the continuous need for the collection of funds from producers. One way to maintain the regulatory framework would be to keep the grain surety bonding program for all grain buyers and warehouses. For anyone who doesn't understand grain bonding, I want to state clearly, grain bonding is not insurance, and its purpose has never been to make producers whole in an insolvency situation. Grain bonding is a financial screening mechanism by an independent third-party surety for those applying for a grain buyer or warehouse license in Minnesota. Grain buyers and warehouses pay a premium equal to approximately 1% of the value of the bond on an annual basis. The bond value represents the skin in the game that a surety is responsible for paying out if a grain buyer or warehouse becomes insolvent. The surety's job is to analyze each applicant's annual financial reports to determine their operational solvency and if the surety will continue to underwrite the bond. It is in the surety's best interest to do their due diligence when analyzing the financial reports of grain buyers and warehouses so that they do not have to pay out on the bond. Unfortunately, this legislation repeals the grain bonding requirement, except for the first-time licensees. I fail to see the logic of this change. The grain bond program provides an independent evaluation of a licensee's financials on an annual basis. If that's no longer required, who will be monitoring financial reporting of the grain industry? Currently, MBA is supposed to be, but we know based on their own admission that they do not have enough knowledgeable staff qualified to analyze these reports. If the grain bond process is good enough for a first-time licensee for their first 3 years of operation, why not keep it in place for all grain buyers and warehouses? Advocates of this legislation have held up the number of other states with grain indemnity funds and how well they protect producers. However, those same states also equally value the regulation of the grain industry and preventing or minimizing future insolvencies by having robust programs and enough staff to do the job. We feel dumping the regulatory aspects of the grain program in exchange for an indemnity fund will ultimately cause more issues down the road and incur greater use of the indemnity fund. The grain industry certainly doesn't want that to happen, so we urge you to consider these points as you discuss this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. The next three testifiers are Rachel Sosnolchik from Second Harvest Heartland, Colin Curriton from Forever Green Initiative on Continuous Living Cover Crops, and David Van Eekhout from The Good Acre. Rachel, if you can please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
All right. My name is Rachel Sosojic. I'm a public affairs specialist at Second Harvest Heartland, Chair Vang and members of the committee. Thanks for the time today. As you may know, Second Harvest Heartland is one of the country's largest food banks. We support more than 1,500 food shelves and program partners across a 59-county service area. I'll start by expressing our appreciation for this legislature's work to advance policies that support Minnesotans experiencing food insecurity, such as universal school meals and emergency food shelf relief. But these investments alone are not enough to end hunger in Minnesota, which remains at a record high due to ongoing consequences of the pandemic, elevated grocery costs, and sunsetting federal benefits. The current need for food assistance is surpassing even peak COVID-era levels. With a $17 billion budget surplus, we joined dozens of partners from across the state calling for a robust increase in the agriculture budget that would allow this committee to fully invest in the programs and policies that connect our communities with the food and resources they need to thrive. This includes Minnesota's Farm to Food Shelf program, which was heard in this committee thanks to Representative Frederick, and provides our state's food shelves with a consistent supply of locally grown and produced milk, protein, and produce. As a reminder, the food that we source through Farm to Food Shelf is just connected to hunger relief organizations across all 87 Minnesota counties. We leverage these state dollars to source the most in-demand items at food shelves, which alleviates some of the pressure on the emergency food network to provide staples to the communities we serve. We echo many, many others, ensuring that we understand this committee has to make a lot of tough choices regarding how to spend your limited funds. So we're here today to express our disappointment that the current proposed budget does not do enough to support important programs that connect Minnesota families with local and nutritious foods. We hope that legislative leaders in both parties, as well as the governor's office, will reconsider this committee's target and choose to invest more in Minnesota agriculture in order to, in part, fully fund our full request of $6.1 million a year to support Farm to Food Shelf and invest in other efforts to get homegrown food to our neighbors in need. I understand that hunger relief programs like Farm to Food Shelf are a relatively small portion of what's already a small budget, but I also know that everyone in this room is united in wanting to feed people. With a $17 billion surplus and record numbers of Minnesotans facing hunger, we can and must do more. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Rachel. Colin.
Chair Vang and members of the committee, my name is Colin Kiritan. I work as the Director of Adoption and Scaling for the University of Minnesota Forever Green Initiative. And on behalf of a diverse statewide coalition, I would like to thank you for including funding initially introduced by Representative Brand in HF 2278 for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's new Developing Markets for Continuous Living Cover Crops program. As everyone has stated, we appreciate the constraints on the committee this year to meet the many worthy needs and opportunities in Minnesota agriculture. This idea was hatched in 2021 in partnership with determined entrepreneurs working every day to create supply chains, products, and markets for new perennial and winter annual crops. Partners' efforts beyond the farm gate are critical to driving the development of new multi-million dollar industries in climate-smart agriculture in Minnesota and to deliver on their potential to protect our natural resources, provide new production opportunities, and prevent tremendous costs in water quality treatment, as just one example. Simply put, without supply chains and markets, these exciting new perennial and winter annual crops effectively don't exist as real opportunities for growers. In order to scale continuous living cover agriculture, in addition to the robust research and development funding indicated by Dr. Hunter, we need markets. These entrepreneurs' ask was simple: expand the support being received by scientists and growers to also include entrepreneurs and small and medium-sized businesses as valued partners in advancing continuous living cover agriculture. Like many industries based on new and emerging technologies from ethanol to renewable energy, state funding is critical to support their establishment and initial growth. This idea quickly expanded to a diverse coalition of advocates for agriculture, rural livelihoods, water quality, and soil health, including grassroots efforts advancing perennial agriculture systems informed by indigenous leaders creating pathways for emerging BIPOC and immigrant farmers. This effort succeeded last year with $500,000 allocation to MDA for a pilot grant program. This program was launched by MDA 2 weeks ago, and applications will soon be rolling in. This bill was initially introduced at a higher level to reflect the real needs of establishing at least four new climate-smart industries in Minnesota for Kernza perennial grain, winter camelina, hazelnut, and elderberry. With many other new perennial and winter annual crops in development over the coming years, the coalition would note that this program is well-aligned for base funding to support the initial development of their associated industries. Should additional resources become available, coalition members request that this committee consider expanded allocation to include long-term support through initial base funding. Again, the coalition sincerely appreciates being included in this year's House budget to meet immediate opportunities and needs. Finally, tremendous unmet needs and opportunities exist in Minnesota agriculture and rural communities today. Many of these priorities are worthy of expanded support should it become available as the legislative session proceeds. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Director Collin. David.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Van Eckhout. I'm the Farm Program Director at the Good Acre. I would like to thank all of you for the hard work that you've done on behalf of agriculture this session. You've had some hard choices to make as you finalized the Ag Omnibus Bill. And I'd particularly like to thank Representative Sensimura for carrying our bill in the committee. I'm grateful that the committee has provided support for several opportunities for new and emerging farmers within the bill. This includes increased funding for the Emerging Farmers Office, increased funding for down payment assistance grants, funding for technical assistance from CDFIs, grants for equipment and infrastructure, urban agriculture education, and funding for the Good Acres Leaf Program. This represents a combined investment of almost $5 million in new and emerging farmers. Unfortunately, this funding falls short of offering a true emerging farmer package because it lacks market support. When I ask farmers what they need, their answer is markets, markets, markets. New and emerging farmers need access and support for entry-level markets for their products. The only funding for entry-level market support is the $200,000 earmarked for the LEAF program, or about 4% of that investment in emerging farmers. These investments in new and emerging farmers are helping farmers to plant the seed, but planting the seed without a market is the quickest way to end someone's dream of becoming a full-time farmer. I'm here today to ask you to amplify those investments by providing greater funding for the two entry-level markets that already exist for emerging farmers, farmers markets and the LEAF program. These markets offer the flexibility and opportunity to learn what new and emerging farmers need in order to succeed. Increased funding for these markets combined with other investments makes a strong emerging farmer package that can have broad support. If not now via amendments, then in conference, I urge you to look holistically at the package for new and emerging farmers and to include support for farmers markets and increase funding for the LEAF program. I also want to encourage you to include language in the farm to school appropriation to support a statewide farm to school coordinator. I myself was a reviewer on the farm to school grants this last round, and seeing multiple grants from multiple school districts all trying to reinvent the wheel is just a really unfortunate way that that investment is being used. A statewide coordinator could really make a huge difference in that program. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Director David. Are there any further testifiers that would like to testify on this committee? Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Peter LaFontaine. I'm the Agriculture Policy Manager at Friends of the Mississippi River. Our top two priorities before this committee are appropriations for Forever Green and the Department of Ag's Continuous Living Cover Value Chain Development Fund. These complementary programs are among the most transformative and forward-looking opportunities in ag today, and our state offers our state a pathway toward revitalized rural communities, improved public health, and a cleaner environment. Moreover, they're programs that have historically and deservedly drawn support from across the political spectrum. Like everyone else that's gone before me, we're grateful for all the work that you've done to include our priorities in this omnibus package, given the constraints you faced. However, the funding levels for both initiatives are far short of the amounts requested, and the need clearly outstrips those marks. The Forever Green Initiative routinely achieves a 5-to-1 federal return on state investment, and to illustrate just one element of its work, Forever Green scientists have recently made advances that could position winter annual oil seeds as a major sustainable cash crop on millions of acres in Minnesota and the upper Midwest. Base funding is vital to allow Forever Green to hire and retain world-class researchers, and Clean Water Fund appropriations, while also incredibly important, are not a substitute for this certainty. Meanwhile, the small and mid-sized local companies that make up the emerging value chains for perennial and winter annual crops need our support now if we're to reach their potential and, in doing so, unlock the transformative potential of continuous living cover. As the saying goes, we get what we pay for. Developing new crops and markets takes time, but investing in equipment, facilities, and people can significantly shorten how long it takes to stand up viable enterprises. There's still an opportunity this session to adequately invest in the future of Minnesota farming, and I urge you to work with your colleagues to increase the budget target and prioritize sustainable agriculture initiatives like Forever Green and value chain development grants. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Are there any further testifiers? Are there any further testifiers that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none. I know that we are a bit over time on committee, but I will allow members to ask questions if they have any questions to the testifiers or the testimonies today. Right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment and a question for the Department of Ag on the indemnity fund. We've heard a lot of testifiers here, and many of them have talked about being somewhat disappointed in the funding levels they've received in this bill, and yet we have a $17 billion surplus. So it's amazing the priorities of somebody somewhere to not treat agriculture with the size of an increase I think that this area of our state economy deserves. That's my comment. Now my question for somebody from the Department of Ag on the indemnity fund.
I believe Commissioner Peterson is still here, and Deputy Commissioner Andrea Volvo is here too as well.
I'll ask my question as you're coming up, Commissioner. Looking in the bill language, I don't see anything that specifies if this bill becomes law, when the checkoff would begin on farmers' grain proceeds. The only thing I see is you would have to make intentions known by May 1st, and I don't think this is going to be finished up by May 1st. So does this mean we're like at least a year down the road?
Commissioner Peterson?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I have Nick Milanowski with, and I'm going to let him answer that because it's something that we're kind of working through, but there's some caveats to all of this, so he can explain it better. So,
Doctor, if you can identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my name is Nick Milanowski. I am the Program Manager for the Fruit, Vegetable, and Grain Program within the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. To Representative Anderson's question, yes, the requirement in the bill language says that we would have to notify all grain buyers in the state that by May 1st that the collection would start on July 1st following that notification. So if we were unable to make that notification, it would have to be delayed a year.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That answers my question. And just one additional comment, I think some of the provisions pertaining to treated seeds and such, PFAS need additional work. The treated seeds thing, I don't think the way it is right now is workable. We heard testimony from the lady who really works in the industry that the spring is an extremely busy time of the year, and just have concerns with that program being workable for farmers here in Minnesota. We will take that up again on Thursday, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any final remarks before we adjourn? Okay. Well, I want to thank the committee and members and to the public and testifiers for being here today and taking the time to share your thoughts, concerns, and compliments and feedback. We've heard many issues throughout session, and we have considered many things that have been brought to us. There were several themes that I've looked into while creating this budget. You can find bills that make direct investments to farmers and producers, address food access issues, land access issues, pollinator issues, and ensure that the state agencies are able to provide the services for the agriculture community. As I said earlier, this session, I think it's very possible to achieve priorities for both big ag to small ag, rural farmers, urban farmers, for the environment and sustainability of agriculture. And I hope that stakeholders can find a piece of their contributions within this budget. I think it is no surprise that the Ag Committee usually has a small budget target compared to the other committees. And although we always want a larger target, I also want to give a little recognition that it is a bigger target than usual for the Ag Committee. Agriculture has not been overlooked and investments continue to grow, and I will make sure that continues to happen. I'm thankful to hear the many wishes and dreams and needs of the agriculture community. And as agriculture continues to be one of the largest economies in Minnesota, this budget looks at taking care of what we have and preparing us for the future of agriculture. And with that, members, we will also hear additional testimony from the public on Thursday, markup, and then passage on Thursday. And with that, our next... I'll lay the bill, House File 2278 as amended, over, laid over. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.